This is 5 o'clock shadow on the Pacifica Radio Network, originating at WBAI. I'm Robert Knight in New York. The New York City mayoral campaign came to the Bronx Wednesday when seven contenders for the Democratic Party nomination appeared in a forum at the faith-based Monroe College, and 5 o'clock shadow was there. Topics included the economy, drugs, policing, education, and the relationship between church and state. The candidates responded sequentially to questions in the following order: Bill de Blasio, Randy Credico, Bill Thompson, Eric Salgado, Adolfo Carrion, Sal Albanese, and John Liu.
Amen to all of the candidates. The first question is, if you were to be elected mayor for November, would you allow houses of worship of every faith to rent from public schools? Secondly, share with us your position on religious pregnancy crisis centers being able to operate without requiring them to post a signage stating, "We do not conduct abortions in this premise." And how would you be inclusive in working with the people of faith across the city?
Bill de Blasio.
Thank you, Bishop. I have been proud to be a leader with so many people in this room in the right to worship movement, because I was appalled when Mayor Bloomberg interpreted our constitutional values to say that houses of worship of a variety of faiths would be excluded from public facilities like schools and public housing centers that they had used positively and productively on behalf of communities for years and years without any problem, without any question of separation of church and state. I was appalled because it was unfair to treat faith-based organizations differently. I believe our Constitution suggests clearly you treat everyone the same, regardless of which faith they're a part of, but you also respect faith-based organizations just as you would any other nonprofit, especially when you remember that faith-based organizations were doing the work so often that government wasn't, helping substance abusers, helping the poor, helping people who've been left behind by society. When government didn't have solutions, so many people in this room and so many of the churches and houses of worship you were a part of provided the solutions. We need to respect and embrace that. So no, I would not continue the mayor's policies. I would keep the doors open and welcome to faith-based institutions, to houses of worship, to continue to be in our public schools and NYCHA centers, just like anyone else, same ground rules as anyone else. Second, on the clinics, I do believe in full disclosure. I want to be very straightforward about that. I think there has to be disclosure outside those centers saying what they do and don't do. I think that's necessary and fair. Third, on the role of faith-based leaders, faith-based organizations. Again, too often government has held the faith community at arm's length to the detriment of all. Faith community, to me, is partners. I mentioned at a clergy roundtable forum a few days ago, a lot of my formative experiences were in the Central America movement in the 1980s, and there we saw the power of liberation theology and what it meant for people of faith to play an active, strong role in their communities, in their countries, in the betterment of everyone societally. I believe we are partners. And I would like to see real faith representation at City Hall, a regular meeting between the mayor and top aides and faith leaders, a real consultation. If you need proof, just look at what happened after Hurricane Sandy, where the faith community got there so often well before the government got there.
Time. Just one moment. I want you to make sure you keep your eye on the timekeeper so that everyone will have enough time.
Randy Credico.
Keep it really short, this one. All right?
Thank you so much.
Let me just say, I said about stop and frisk on the Fourth Amendment. I'm a strictly believe in abiding by the Constitution. So the First Amendment, separation of church and state, I'm totally for that, and I don't believe that. And, you know, it's easy to just pander and say that I think that churches should rent from schools. I do not believe that because I abide by the Constitution. That being said, when people, politicians are, you know, things are parochial at a lot of these different forums, and politicians become Pinocchio, and they'll say whatever they have to say to please that crowd. I will not do that. So, that being said, Thank you, Mr. Frere, for oriento. Voy a hablar en español también. Mejor que el cadilla no habla español nada, okay? We've heard the mayor speak lies in both languages. We think that what we're doing is great for the city. Necesitamos poner más dinero entre el público malos en cárceles. So, his Spanish is worse than Bush's English. So, all right, I had to get away from that answer. So, what I'm saying here is that I do not believe the second point that Bill made, full disclosure, totally for that at the clinics or whatever they do. And what was the third one on the face? Look, he's right. I met Bill in Nicaragua in the 80s. I was doing my act in front of the U.S. Embassy, and the faith-based communities that were down there, the religious leaders down there, Father Miguel de Soto, who was down there, Father Ernesto Cardinal, and all the liberation theologians down there did a great job in bringing peace. Unfortunately, the Pope was not good at that time. John Paul, I came down there.
10 seconds.
I got 10 seconds. And then you got some bad faith people, too, like Rios Montt in Guatemala, the war criminal who murdered 60,000 people. Just because they're religious doesn't mean that they're good.
Bill Thompson.
I think that first, when it comes to, well, take a step back for a second. Schools have been rented by religious institutions for years, and there was absolutely no problem at all. And in an arbitrary decision by the mayor of the city of New York and followed by the Corporation Council, they decided to end that. I think it was a mistake. I believe that we should allow and continue to allow houses of worship to rent space from the city of New York. It is not a question of separation of powers. They have been there for years, things have worked fine, and they provided services to the people of our community. Why would we change that now? Based on the whim of one individual. So I would allow, as the mayor of the city of New York, we would go back to the way it was before. Churches would be allowed to rent space from schools and community centers. That's number one. And then last but not least, in that area, if you go and look, houses of worship of the city of New York have been important to things like feeding those who are hungry, been able to provide shelter for so many that the city of New York has not been able to do, has been able to help in leading in this city. Why would we say no? That's number one. Number two, yes, full disclosure outside of clinics to provide services. And honestly, full disclosure makes sense. But last but not least, in the question about working with the clergy of the city of New York. Clergy of the city of New York in so many ways have helped to lead. Our houses of worship over the decades have helped to lead in New York City when it comes to issues of civil rights and so many others. Our churches, our faith-based communities have led. When you look at development across the city of New York, in so many instances, there are a number of churches who have provided those services, housing, and so many other things. I believe that in the city hall, there should be an office of faith-based development. A mayor's office of faith-based development to work with you in development and growth in the city of New York. And the clergy should have a seat at the table in the discussion of the future of the city of New York. That's what I believe in.
Well, I'm not going to only allow it.
Eric Salgado.
I'm going to create a program where I'm going to encourage the non-for-profit organization to come and rent all the school facilities so we could generate money that is going to be exclusively used in the Department of Education. We have more than 1,745 school facilities. They're not used after 3 o'clock, after 5 o'clock. We have to encourage the non-for-profit organization, which are more than eager to help the community. Most of the help from this community, this non-for-profit organization, is going overseas because it's so difficult to help in this city. When you want a location, you have to pay $5,000 a month to create a program that is going to educate our youth. When we have so many beautiful facilities that we could rent it, we're going to create a lot of jobs that is going to go for a lot of students that are just graduating from college. Imagine if we opened in each school and we encourage a non-for-profit organization to open programs such as ESL programs, School of Art, School of Music. I was renting a school when it was banned by the mayor. And it was very difficult to explain my community what happened. And we have to make sure that we just don't talk over here, because it's easy to talk as a politician and promise a lot of things. But the reality is that right now, you're supposed to be able to have access to those schools. But when many of the pastors, they go to this school to rent it out, they give you the runaround and they say, well, we have to speak to this person, the other person. We have to create a program that when the minister comes and solicited the facility, right away he get it, because he's going to do nothing but good to the community. I believe in the separation of the church and the state, but we don't have to be enemy. We are working for the same community, and who better than the minister and the people and the community of faith to do the difference? If we work together, we can make the difference in this city. Right now I'm running a food pantry in my church, and believe me, a lot of people, over 1,000 people per week are coming to my church facility to get the food that they need for their family. Thank you.
Thank you, Bishop.
Adolfo Carrion.
I think many of you know that my father was a pastor for many years and head of an evangelical church organization, and that I am the product of the evangelical church. I think many of you know that I was a youth pastor in the Bronx, and in fact, I was a youth pastor at Crossroads Tabernacle on Castle Hill Avenue. We started out in a storefront on Castle Hill Avenue, just one block east of Westchester Avenue. We outgrew that space, and guess what we had to do? We had to go rent a public school on Castle Hill Avenue to make sure we can continue to grow the ministry of that church. And then eventually that church was able to buy an old theater, and it is one of the most successful churches in New York City ministering to the people of the Bronx. So the answer to that question for me is a slam dunk and very simple. And you know, my father also grew a church organization from 47 congregations to 360 congregations in the northeastern United States. And how did we do that? Starting in storefronts, renting schools, and then having the ability to buy a building and make this city better. The answer is yes, churches absolutely should rent public schools. Number two, on the issue of the community centers and full disclosure and the ability to provide services related to birthing, and say that you don't support a certain aspect of it, I think if you're a religious institution, you have the freedom, it's a free country, you have the freedom to do that, and you ought to be able to disclose that right up front. And on the role of the faith community, I believe that the church and the faith communities play a prophetic role in society in ensuring that we focus on the things that are right, that make a more just and fair society. We did it in the Bronx. It was the faith community that turned the Bronx around in the 1980s. Not politicians, not City Hall. It was the faith communities. Thank you.
Sal Albanese.
I also support full disclosure, as most of my colleagues here. I'm a big believer in utilizing our schools after the regular school day. I think that one of the great tragedies of New York City is the last 20 years is the way these programs have been literally eliminated in many communities. I spent a tremendous amount of time in those public school buildings in the evening and in the afternoons. I also worked in them as a public school teacher. They kept a lot of kids out of trouble, like myself and many others, and kept them engaged in sports activities, arts programs, music programs. I pledge as mayor to expand that on a broad level, because that will do an awful lot to reduce youth crime and have young people engaged in a positive way. And that these school buildings, as was pointed out, lay idle on weekends. They should be full community centers of community activity, 7 days a week, and for most of the day. We have many families, we have two people working, and the young people need somewhere to go, and this is the way to do it. It's also very cost effective. Regarding, I'm a product, by the way, of the tremendous programs that many of the faith-based churches around the city provide. I play baseball for the CYO Catholic Youth Organization. Did a great job. I spent a lot of time in those playgrounds. And religious programs and faith-based groups around the city do an awful lot to help our country and our city. I do take a pause when it comes to providing after-school activities or after-school centers and schools for religious services. I think that really is the separation of church and state, so I don't think religious services should be held at public schools.
John Liu.
Thank you very much. I think that religious organizations should not be discriminated against, and they should have the same access that other nonprofit organizations have in all of our public facilities. That's the way it is. That's the way it's been for a long time, and there was no need to exclude or discriminate against organizations simply because they're faith-based. But now the administration, the Boomer administration, will talk about the court order and the ruling. But I think their attitude is betrayed by how they rolled it out. That a faith-based organization could have been renting space in a school for 10, 20 years, and they were given notice to get out within 2 or 3 months. That is a sheer, utter lack of respect. And that, I think, betrays how the city has been dealing with our clergy leaders and our faith-based organizations for too long. We should be partnering with our clergy leaders, providing resources to faith-based organizations, because it's actually more cost-effective to provide many of the services that people actually need. When people need shelter, the first place they go to in many cases are their churches or faith-based organizations, far more compassionate and efficient than city government could ever dream of being. When people are hungry, they'll go to the food pantry, like Reverend Salvador's pantry. We should be helping stock more of these around the city. The point is that there needs to be a far greater partnership. And I think the fact that we are in this discussion with our clergy leaders and our faith-based organization speaks volumes to where the city is headed. Full disclosure in all of our teen pregnancy clinics and in any public place. Thank you.
Come on, let's give your candidates a round of applause. The next question we're going to ask John Liu and Adolfo Carrion Jr., would you answer this for us? If you were elected mayor, who would you appoint as chancellor of New York City public schools? How would you go about increasing the present low scores in state standardized tests as SAT scores? And what would your position be on sex education in the public schools?
Thank you very much.
2 minutes.
I'm looking for a whole brand new administration, a city hall that is vastly different from what it is today, a city hall that actually looks like the people of New York City. I'm looking for all different people. I do not have a chancellor in mind, nor do I have a police commissioner in mind. I do know that they will be new people, because we need new blood, fresh ideas, and energy to lead the people of this city into the future. But I do know that the chancellor, and I think most of my colleagues will agree with me here, that the chancellor should be somebody who actually has some kind of educational background. This is something that's required in state law, but under Mayor Bloomberg, all three of his chancellors have required a waiver, an exemption from the state legal requirements. What we will have is a chancellor who actually knows something about educating the kids of this city. When it comes to the test scores, I believe that the city has focused too much on the standardized test scores, that it's these once a year high stakes exams that have been driving too many of the policy discussions that don't actually improve the kids' education. My son Joey is in the 7th grade, he's 12 years old, and a large part of his years, school year has been about preparing for the test in the spring. That's not actually letting him learn better. What we need to do is actually perhaps have more tests.
but tests that are administered by teachers on a, maybe a weekly or bi-weekly pop quiz level, where the intent is to not to spin the numbers game, but the intent is for the teachers to actually gauge whether the kids are learning or not.
10 seconds.
That's how we ultimately have students learn, and that's how ultimately the students will really increase their grades. Not by coaching for the tests, but by actually learning more and therefore being better inherently prepared for the exam.
Time.
Thank you.
Thank you, Bishop. On the matter of the Chancellor for the Education Department, I think that the single most important criteria for a Chancellor is that the person has been in the classroom and has been an educator. I don't think that our Chancellor and the person who's in charge of our education system and ensuring that at the end of the day we get the results that we need to prepare citizens and to ensure that they're prepared to compete in a modern economy, that person come from the business world to then simply run a data-driven business and a test a test mill that ultimately only looks at the results of tests and not at the wholesome education and the fulsome education of our children. So that would be one. Obviously, I don't know who that person is, but we would have a very aggressive search for who that person might be. But we certainly don't need a business person running the education department. Number two, in terms of outcomes in the classroom, I agree with John that we have been teaching to the test to the detriment of holistic education and preparing our kids for life and for the economy. The principal purpose of the free public education system in America is to prepare the citizenry to participate fully in this franchise, to own our democracy, to fully participate in this democracy and understand it and have a stake in it and know that they are the shepherds of this delicate franchise. We are failing miserably. In 2009, 3 out of 10 voters came out to vote in the mayoral election, the single most important local decision that the citizenry makes that will impact every aspect of their lives. 7 in 10 stayed home because they no longer believe that it matters, because we are not preparing them to participate in this democracy. And the last question, which is sex education in public schools. I think that the school does have a responsibility to teach some fundamentals about caring for the human body and ensuring that you protect yourself and that you're safe. And that's the role of the public.
Come on, let's give him a hand. We're going to direct the same questions. So we're going to ask Bill de Blasio and also Bill Thompson, would you answer that second question? If you were elected mayor, how would you appoint a next chancellor of the school system, and how would you go about increasing the present low scores in the state standardized tests, such as SAT, and how would you, and what would your position be on sex education in the public schools?
Well, not only do I think we need a chancellor who is an educator, we need something more. We need a chancellor who respects parents. You know, the reality of the Bloomberg years is parents were held at arm's length, were dismissed. Well, I'm a public school parent myself, and I always say parents are the first and last teachers of our children. We are the essential part of the educational process. So how can you have a chancellor and a mayor who don't even want parents at the table? They don't want us to be part of decisions about our own schools. They're going to open a school, close a school without us? How is that possible? And how do they bring another school into our school building without asking us what we think it means for our own children? I want a chancellor who is a great educator, but a chancellor who believes that they're really going to make the schools work. They have to start a profound and deep partnership with the parents of this city. Everything from how to get them involved as volunteers, how their voices need to be heard on big issues, and how to make sure the principals and teachers are actually partnering with parents to improve each child's education. You know what parent-teacher conferences are like. You can't actually work with a teacher if you get 3 or 4 minutes to talk about the future of your child once or twice a year. Let's change that. Let's create a real dialogue between the parents and teachers, the schools and parents on an ongoing basis. And let's get the resources we need. I am the only candidate here who's called for a tax on the wealthiest New Yorkers, those who make a half million or more, for two things. Full day, universal pre-K for every single New York City child who needs it. And can I say this as a recovering middle school parent, my kids passed that phase, thank God, after school seat for every middle school child who needs it, because that's that break point in their lives. We have to make sure they get that extra help, that extra support. Those kind of changes. Stop teaching to the test. Stop the false idol of test, standardized testing. That's how you change our school system.
As the former president of the New York City Board of Education, I've had the chance to work with some excellent educators. People like Ray Cortinez was a good chancellor. Rudy Crewe, a good educator also. What we've seen for the last 12 years, people who know almost nothing about education. Joel Klein, Kathy Black. And while Dennis Walcott may be a friend, Dennis is not an educator. We need a real educator at the top of our school system again. It is time. We have gone almost 12 years without a real educator at the top of the public school system. That is first. So we need a real educator to talk about an educational vision again so that all of us in this room, right now I could go around this room, and this is an informed group of people, and ask you, what is the level of expectation for this school year? What should we expect to see? And I would lay out, none of us know, because there's no discussion about that. So we need an educator again at the top who puts forward with a mayor an educational vision. We need to bring things back, to get away from focus and testing or focus on the test. We need to bring things back to a public school education, like art and music education again, like physical education. Those create well-rounded students. Yes, we need to involve parents. And I want to start a parents' academy. So parents have the additional training and support that they need to know how to engage teachers, to know the questions to ask, to know how to be able to work closer with their children. I think we need to have, the structures are there right now,
10 seconds,
in what exists to be able to involve parents, but they're shut out. So we need to make sure that we bring that back to a public school system, stop this focus on tests, look at well-rounded students, and create real leadership within our public schools.
Time. I want to give a round of applause. At this time, Bishop Rodriguez is going to continue our question.
Thank you. We all know your position on Southern Fricks. However, as mayor, what would be your approach on keeping crime down, and who would you appoint as commissioner of the police department? I give this question to John.
Thank you, Bishop Rodriguez. I am very clear on the issue of Southern Fricks, as you mentioned. I believe I'm the only, actually, no, I think Randy and I are the only two candidates here who are in absolute support of abolishing Southern Fricks. Why? Because of the same goal that you just mentioned, Bishop, that we want to reduce crime. We want to keep neighborhoods safe. But the Southern Fricks that's been out there has driven a huge division between communities and the police. Communities aren't talking with the police are having a tougher time doing their job, and when that happens, it makes everybody less safe. Let's take a look at what other cities around the country have been doing that don't do cyber first, but they have still seen a reduction in their crime numbers. They've used strategies like focused deterrence, which is when the police basically focus 24/7 peak on the bad elements in a community. When the police are talking with and partnering with community leaders and the clergy especially, they can identify where the bad spots are. And I think that is the best use of limited police resources, to focus the resources on where the criminality actually occurs, instead of spreading it far and wide, thinking that everybody is bad, stopping hundreds of thousands of people, almost all of whom have done absolutely nothing wrong. So I believe that in order to make everybody more safe, increase cooperation, use strategies like focused deterrence, and make sure that we're not continuing to drive a wedge between the police and the community. That way, everybody will be safer in the city of New York.
Do you have in mind a police commission?
I do not have anybody in mind for any of the top level appointees that a mayor would make. But again, that's further down the road. We would obviously have a full transition process that would identify the best people. But I will say this, that I think we have plenty of talented people in the NYPD right now who are ready, willing, and able to step up.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Same question goes to Bill de Blasio. As mayor of the city of New York, what would be your approach on keeping crime down?
At first, we need a new police commissioner. With all due respect to Ray Kelly, there's no way we are going to fix the disconnect, the wounds in the relationship between police and community unless we have a new commissioner. I believe in community policing. That's the way to get crime down. I believe in a true partnership between police and community. I believe the clergy are crucial to that partnership. Bishop Cesar told a story the other night of how even the clergy are not treated with respect in some cases under the current approach to policing. Well, that's unacceptable because real community policing, which involves some of the ideas that John laid out, for example, like focused deterrence or gang intervention, real community policing is about saying to the community, you help us to understand the problem. Where is the hotspot? Who's the bad guy? Where is the weapon? We treat the community, the police treat the community with respect, with a constant sense of dialogue and partnership. You need a commissioner who believes in community policing up and down the line. And if you don't do that, nothing else will work. We need an inspector general, a strong inspector general, because a check and balance on the police is necessary. We never would have had the proliferation of stop and frisk if there had been some kind of force, independent force, to make sure the police department had policies that were actually making us safer and not creating division and not telling our young people somehow there was something wrong with them, even though they were law-abiding and innocent. So I want a profound change in how we police, in what kind of leadership we have. And I think that will make us safer. This is the crucial part. Anyone who says to you, if you make a change to community policing, you'll be less safe, or if you recognize and respect civil liberties, you'll be less safe, well, they've got it backwards. The divisions that have been created are making us, in fact, this any safety we've had less sustainable. The path to safety is a true partnership between police and community.
Thank you. Randy?
Thank you very much. First of all, I just wanted to say on that last question, I would appoint Dr. Cornell West as Chancellor of Schools, or Dr. Cornell, or Mr. Jerome right here as Chancellor. We need a real educator. So that being said, as far as stop and frisk, how do you make the city safe? Is it really safe with the thugs that are running around from the police department undercover who are from the outer boroughs and Long Island? You have thousands of undercover cops that are whacked out on steroids going around like slave catchers did. This is true. Like slave catchers did back in the 1860s and 1850s in wake of the fugitive slave law. That's their approach. I videotape these guys. I take pictures of them. I went to jail for taking pictures of them. I got a nice lawsuit out of it. This is in the village. You know, that's what they're doing. You have these narcotic squads. They're looking for guys smoking a joint, looking for guys with $5 bags of cocaine. Why don't they spend that time on Wall Street where they commit real crimes? You want to end crime in the city? You tax the rich. I mean, forget about it, Bill. My plan is much bigger. I would charge a huge tax on the rich, and I would use that to improve the communities. A huge tax on Wall Street, a huge tax on real estate, a huge tax on these sporting teams like the Yankees and that center out there, the Barclays Center. They don't pay any taxes. All right, people are being robbed. Look at the workfare program. What a scam that is. Of course it is. I'm with you on that. I've been against that when Rudy Giuliani first brought it out, because Rudy Giuliani was the guy who instigated that crap. And so that's the way he talks, and you know, right now he's like this. So someone's got to do Rudy Giuliani. And if you want Rudy Giuliani back, and you want another 4 years of the current mayor, Bloomberg, then vote for Quinn, all right? If you want her, that means you got 4 more years of Rudy Giuliani and 4 more years of Bloomberg. So,
She wants to keep, oh, I love this commissioner. I want to keep this commissioner. He's a great commissioner. This great commissioner's got a file on half the people in this room. So what happened that occupied Wall Street, that, am I almost done? I am done. So I would appoint Frank Serpico as my commissioner.
Thank you.
Frank Serpico, I would bring him out of retirement, or I would bring Eric Adams and Graham Weatherspoon from 100 Blacks in Law Enforcement to run this police department.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. I pray I don't get rich under your administration. I'll be in trouble.
Mr. Carrion, what would your approach be in keeping crime down as the mayor of the city of New York? What would your approach be in keeping crime down?
Thank you, Bishop. I think that we've lost our center and we've lost our way when we have a city where young people are on pins and needles every time a police officer drives past where they are on the streets. We cannot have a policing strategy, what I call drive-by policing. We have reduced our police force in the last 10 years from 40,000 officers to about 34,000, 33,500 officers. We were then forced to take those officers off of the streets and the old tried and true community policing model that allowed you to know who the police officers were that were assigned to your neighborhood. They walked down Fordham Road. They walked down Burnside Avenue. They walked down Tremont Avenue. They walked down Kingsbridge Road. They understood the pulse of the neighborhood. They walked down the residential streets. They went to the playground. The kids knew their names. They would go and talk to the kids in the neighborhood because they were assigned to that neighborhood. We are now living in this data-driven, results-driven, press conference-driven type of approach where the politicians want to show us the numbers and stand there and get credit for driving crime down. The fact is that New York City is safer than it's been since the 1960s. But we didn't get there by stop and frisk. It started a long time ago. And it started when we decided to deploy under Mayor Dinkins police officers into the neighborhoods and begin to rebuild the trust of the neighborhoods. And now we're driving these numbers, so what I would do is I would restore community policing, restore the police force, and put them on a beat walking our neighborhoods once again.
Thank you. Bill Thompson?
Yeah, I think that it has become clear that the reduction in crime has changed the city unlike almost anything else that I've seen in my lifetime. At the same point, what we have seen in the last 8 years, the increase in stop and frisk, the misuse of stop and frisk, has alienated communities across the city of New York. It has turned off so many communities when we've seen our young people being stopped because of what they look like and who they are, because they are Black or Latino and innocent. So the first thing is, we need a mayor again who will make sure that doesn't happen, who takes responsibility for keeping crime down in the city of New York, who hires a police commissioner. The one thing I've said going back to 2009 is that I'm going to bring my own team to the table. That means changing and bringing in a new police commissioner to the city of New York. It is important also, if we look at going back to community policing, and I will agree with Adolfo and some of my colleagues up here, having a police officer on the street who knows the neighborhood, who knows the people, who you can speak to, changes the way that we deal with the police department. That hasn't existed in a long time. Now the officers are in the cars, riding around. They don't know the people in the neighborhood. We don't know them. So we don't rely on those officers as we should. And they don't get the information that they should to be able to really drive crime down. That's what community policing does. And we have fallen below 35,000 for the first time, the number of officers for the first time in over 30 years. We need to increase the numbers to at least 37,000, but at least 1,000 of those officers should go into the five highest crime precincts so every community in the city of New York can feel safe, not just a few. So that's what I believe in, as far as that's how we focus on keeping crime down and making sure that every neighborhood participates.
Thank you. Reverendo Salgado.
Thank you. I believe the government number one priority should be to keep all the inhabitants safe. We need a safe New York City. Right now, I know the current administration is paying too much attention to the statistic and trying to cook the statistic and chase some people from giving actually report to keep the statistic low. But the reality is that out there, we know the sad truth. People is being pushed into the train rail, people are being shot, and we have to concentrate in the real result, way to fix this problem. Stop and frisk is just a tool, they say, but at the same time, it's the cheap way to going on fixing the problem. The reality is that after many of our officers right now are going to retire, we're going to go back to 34,000 officers. That's how many officers Major Dinkins have, and it was a problem then. It's going to continue being a problem now. We definitely have to go back to 37,000 officers. We have to make sure that we have the big cops on the street, knowing the neighborhood, speaking with the community. They know who is who. We don't need somebody to come from out of town, and all of a sudden, they don't know who's the pastor in the community. They stop the pastor, they stop the rabbi, they stop anyone, because they trying to make the city safe in the cause of the shame of many people. Yes, we have to keep the city safe, and the only way of doing this is by increasing our police forces back to 37,000 officers. And also, we have to make sure that these officers, they are well-trained with a different custom and culture. Because once again, New York City is not a melting pot. It's a collection of community. And many communities, they have different culture, different custom. Some of them, for example, in the prison where I'm serving as a minister, they was trying to resolve a problem with the Guatemalan community. They didn't know they speak a different dialect. They didn't know they come from Central America, not from Puerto Rico. We have to make sure that all the police officers are well trained with socialary program to better serve their community.
Thank you so much.
It's clear that no one who lives in New York City or anywhere across the country should be stopped in violation of the Constitution. The stop and frisk program has created tension between the police and many communities around the city. However, it is an effective tool in keeping guns off the street. What I don't want to do is amend it in the following way. Number one, I would provide intensive training for our recruits in the academy on what is the proper methodology for stopping, questioning, and frisking a suspect. They need intensive training. Many of our young recruits are not that well trained in that area. I would also provide in-service training for the officers across the city, and also test them on what the proper approach is to stopping someone. I also promulgated a public safety plan calling for hiring of 3,500 officers. We broke it down by precincts because we have to establish a rapport between the police and the community. Trust is very important. It's essential. If you don't have that, it breaks down. It's not good for the police, it's not good for the residents. So it's more training. It's additional officers assigned to patrol because we're down 7,000 officers. The third thing that I would do is legalize, tax, and regulate marijuana. It is beyond reality at this point that we're spending $1 billion over the last 10 years prosecuting marijuana arrests.
10 seconds.
And also, a million hours of police officers. Let's tax it, let's regulate it, treat it like alcohol. Let's make it boring, and I talk about this
Thank
with
you.
Someone who's never smoked pot, but it's not good for you, but what we're doing doesn't make sense, and it would also drop the numbers of stop and frisk.
Thank you. I'm gonna ask another question. I'm just gonna ask each candidate to please, we know the problem, just give me the answer. that okay? We know the problem. We know what's going on with Southern Fridge and this and that. Just give me, what would you do? What's your answer on this? In dealing with the reality of the recession, what part of the New York City budget would you seek to cut and also prioritize? And Mr. John, we continue on forward. I can only give you 1 minute. I'm sorry, you're running. I got 7 minutes to go. So okay, thank you.
I have just this morning proposed the people's budget. The people's budget that doesn't look around this budget dance that takes place every year where the mayor proposes to cut these things and then the council speaker just puts it back in. This is a real analysis of $15 billion worth of new resources and $15 billion worth of new needs that the city should take care of. What would be some of the things that I would cut? I would get rid of some of these ridiculous corporate subsidies that big companies get in your tax dollar money. They're supposed to use that money to create jobs, and somehow, after many years, they created no jobs. But they're getting corporate welfare, and we're getting nothing in return. I've today proposed $700 million in new educational needs, everything from a universal preschool for three-year-olds all the way to college counselors for our high school students so that they can be well prepared for college. Education is the number one priority. Public education and also creating affordable housing. I've got an economic development plan that will create tens of thousands of affordable housing.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Next, Sam.
I agree with John. Education will be my top priority, and we're going to make sure that it's funded adequately, because if you have an educated citizenry, the issues of economic development, of crime, all of these things will be certainly improving dramatically. And one of the things that I want to do, as I mentioned earlier, I set up pediatric wellness centers in low-income communities around the city. We now know through compelling evidence the first 3 years of a child's life are pivotal. Poverty is the main reason that some of these young people come into our building so far behind at 4 or 5 years of age. Poverty causes stress. Stress causes developmental issues. Knowing that, it's political malpractice not to address this early on. We have a great example in New York City, in the Harlem Children's Zone. We have a baby college. We need to replicate that around the city.
Thank you.
The budget exercise has become this kabuki dance where the mayor presents his priorities, the city council reacts to it, cuts everything that they care about, that he knows that ultimately will be restored, at least partly restored. They do a political dance, they do the press conference dance. The people in the meantime in the neighborhoods that are trying to deliver education, that are trying to deliver social services, that are trying to deliver opportunity, suffer because they have to expect that they're going to, that this could be the one time that those cuts actually go through. And every time, unfortunately, the executive continues to chip away at those very important areas of human capital that are the single most important investment that we make. So let me go to this and say,
10 seconds.
The best social program is a job. The principal responsibility of our government is to prepare the citizenry to participate in this democracy and to fully participate in this economy. That's what we need to do, and that's what we need to focus our budget on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our Department of Education is taking almost 33% of our budget. So I will concentrate in generating money that will be exclusively used for the Department of Education. At the same time, we have to get rid of all the non-functional educators. We have to take care of the rubber room and make sure that nobody's sitting there doing nothing and getting paid by doing nothing. We also have to make sure that we give priority in our Department of Education. Right now, the mayor said that he's gonna lay out over 2,500 educators. He was not able to sign a fair contract with the bus driver, but yet he's paying doctors and nurses to give the morning after pill without the concern of the parents to child of 13 and 14 years old. We have to make sure that we give the priority to the teachers, because without educators, we cannot teach. There are programs that do not belong in our school.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
you look at the budget of the city of New York, look at what's happened over the last 11 years. Billions of dollars, not millions, not tens of millions, billions of dollars are being contracted out. Private corporations, corporations and organizations that aren't in the city of New York, they're basically taking our jobs and the money and contracting it out. We need to bring those dollars back in-house. When we talk about where do we find money, that's the first place to start. Bringing those outsourced dollars back in-house so that New York City doesn't continue to be privatized around us. And then if you start bringing those things in, no, our education system, let's create focus in creating an extended day. Let's create more time on task for our young people. The one thing that we know, more time works for our children. It helps them learn better. If we want to talk about providing a real education for our young people, let's make sure that we give those students who need it more time on task, and that's where the money comes from. Thank you.
Now, I, of course, if I cut the police department big time, especially on the new drones that we have on. We're actually building new drones in the city. I don't know if you read about that, but that would be one place I would cut back on money for the prosecution of pot. I'm the next pot smoker, and I'm a part-time pot smoker, maybe. But the mayor cannot raise taxes on it because it's the governor who has to do that. All right, I think we have been smoking pots out. But I would raise money. First of all, I charge a $10 billion occupation fee on Mayor Bloomberg for living in the city in that house for 12 years on 72nd Street. All right? No, but we could charge just a 0.5% transaction tax on Wall Street. We could raise like $60 billion. I would raise the budget to $100 billion in the city, create more jobs, an FDR-style jobs program administered by Richard Wolff and my good friend over at the Times, Paul Krugman. All right, George here.
Bishop Rodriguez, you said solutions only. Here we go. One, tax the wealthiest New Yorkers, those who make $500,000 or more, so we can have full day universal pre-K, so we can have after school for every middle school child who needs it. Bring those resources in where we need them. Two, end the ridiculous consulting contracts and special projects of Mayor Bloomberg's imagination at the Department of Education that wasted our money and didn't help our kids. We're going to cut those the first day on the job. Three, thinking about our homeless. 50,000 among us with no home living in shelter. Well, we would do the more humane thing to help them stay in their homes, stay in their apartments, and that would save the taxpayer money because rental subsidies and anti-eviction legal services cost a lot less than dislocating the people and putting families in shelter.
Let's give all the candidates a great applause. They did a great job. In closing, every candidate was invited, so you all know that. Every candidate was invited. The future of New York is not just in the hands of political leaders. We really believe the faith-based community is essential to the quality of life of our future, and that's why City Action Coalition is hosting this event. I am Joseph Matera. We want to wish you God bless and Godspeed. Thank you.
You have been listening to a New York City mayoral forum convened by the City Action Coalition at the faith-based Monroe College in the Bronx. Candidates for the Democratic Party nomination included Bill de Blasio, Randy Credico, Bill Thompson, Eric Salgado, Adolfo Carrion, Sal Albanese, and John Liu. And that concludes today's 5 o'clock shadow, engineered by your reporter, Michael G. Haskins, and Reggie Johnson. We welcome your comments with an email to theshadow@wbai.org. And for 5 o'clock shadow, I'm Robert Knight in New York.